It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
From the Opioid Response Consortium, Community Integrated Health Services, Sherry Reeves and Raymond Jones, kind of give us an overview of what each of your responsibilities are.
I'm in charge of the True Blood program, which is a diversion program with the jails, and a mental health diversion program. I'm the manager of the program and a mental health professional.
I am the case manager for Grays Harbor and Pacific County for the True Blood program. So I meet with individuals one-on-one and help them get connected to resources.
How do you work with the opioid response group?
We were invited to be part of the consortium back a couple of years ago when it first started, when the grant was first in the planning phase before the consortium even started. So we've been involved since the beginning, trying to get resources on the harbor to help people out that have problems with substance use disorder.
Now, my understanding from the interview that I had the other day was that this is for people that have no other options to get help. And so that's where you guys come in, because this group is involved in making sure that everybody, no matter what their background is, their financial issue, is that they can get help, correct?
Through various parts of the grant, mm-hmm. We do have a part that is helping people get into treatment that are underinsured and can't afford it, to make sure that everybody that wants treatment can get it, to break down those barriers.
Now, you're involved in counseling folks that have addiction issues?
I'm a certified peer counselor, mm-hmm. and so I have lived experience with addiction and with the courts and the jail systems. And so it is a form of counseling. But it's more of a supportive role that I take. I can identify with people because I've been there. It's been a while.
She's got the street cred.
Yeah. That's what people tell me. I've got street cred. And I also know a lot of the resources because I've been in recovery for 19 years. And so I have a lot of friends that are working in the industry, helping people get into treatment, things like that. So I know people.
So how have things changed since you went into recovery? Are things done differently now than they were back then when it comes to trying to rehab somebody?
Yes. The stigma around addiction is still there, but it's not as prevalent as it used to be. I was kind of breaking barriers when I got clean because while I was still in treatment, I was trying to find a place to live. And I would tell people, well, I'm an addict, I'm in recovery, and I would be shut down a lot. But I felt for myself, for my recovery, I wanted to be on the up and up. I felt it would keep me accountable. And I see a lot more of that going on now in the mainstream than was kind of 20 years ago when I was going through it. And then when I first got into my addiction, and my mom and dad figured out what was going on because they didn't have any priors.
How old were you then?
I was 18.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just coming out of high school. I was a club kid in Seattle. So I started off with club drugs. I didn't know it was going to grow into a 16-year career. Yeah, it ended up being a lot heavier than I thought because I didn't know about addiction back then. In the mid-80s, we didn't really talk about it like it is talked about today, where it's a serious disease. Back then, it was more, well, you're making bad choices. It's your fault. There was a lot of shame attached to it. And today, there's still some of that, but not nearly as much as they used to be. And we need to get away from it being stigmatizing at all. It's a disease like any other. And just because people feel like they have a choice, you know, when they see somebody out doing something as a result of their addiction, they feel like, you know, well, they could choose not to do that. And to an extent, that's true. But in a certain part of addiction, I feel like that choice is taken from us. We're not thinking rationally. You know, it causes mental breakdown.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, the situation, the way it is with substance use disorder is that people start off voluntarily, of course, for various reasons. Maybe to, for example, the average person who's having a lot of pain and they go to their doctor and they get opiates and somehow they get addicted to those opiates. And this is a major problem across the United States. It's a lot less than it was maybe 2 years ago when doctors were prescribing a lot more than they are now. But that is a situation that a lot of people have gotten into and they hide it. They stay under the wraps, as it were. I remember radio personality Rush Limbaugh was addicted, and he came forward with it after he got addicted to pain pills. And it happens to a lot of people, and we don't even know about it. But they keep it quiet because of the stigma that goes to it. Because now, wow, I'm an opiate addict, you know, which is maybe that's true, but it needs to be addressed, and it doesn't need to be addressed with shame. It's not their fault that this happened. Other people might do it because they're, you know, young kids, like in Sherry's situation, where they're just checking something out. They want to see how it affects them. They want to see what it feels like. And they don't even really realize that before they have gotten a handle on it, it's gotten a handle on them. And once it gets a handle on you, it becomes a disease. You can't control it anymore. You could control it in the beginning, but you can't control it once it becomes a disease.
Now, what's your background?
My background, well, with addiction, my background is I'm an alcoholic. I've been in recovery for 30 years, but I was what might be considered a falling down drunk alcoholic for a number of years. And I ended up waking up in the middle of a street, in a drain, sort of speak, and I had a car honking at me, telling me to get the heck out of the way. Only used a little more choice words, and it finally convinced me that something needed to change, and I started to go to 12-step programs, and most of my healing, as it were, is through the 12-step programs, but I've been a substance use disorder therapist and counselor for years. Right now, I'm working with True Blood, so I'm not doing that, but I have done it for years in four different states, actually.
Now, why is it, because I've noticed this, why is it that generally if somebody takes a certain drug, they have certain actions they do or feelings they have or how it affects them. Yet with alcohol, it can be all over the map. You can have somebody that can drink. They get a little giddy. That's it. Some people can, you know, drink. Their personalities totally change. And I've often noticed that because I was in the military and there was a lot of drinking going on. And some guys would just be, you know, okay, I'm fine. You know, others would be laughing and others would get just very irritated about anything, get in fights. What is it about alcohol that makes different types of emotions come up that maybe other drugs don't do the same way?
Well, alcohol is a depressant right off the bat, so it's a little different, let's say, than methamphetamine or opiates. So it's a very heavy duty, probably one of the heaviest depressants that is out there, and so it tends to depress the system. It depresses people. All of these things, once they become addiction, as it were, we go to the pleasure center of the brain, basically. So methamphetamine, opiate addictions, alcoholism, marijuana addiction, any of the anything that's an addiction, and consider even like a doorknob turning addiction, is an addiction that goes to the pleasure center in the brain. And once it gets in there, these things change. So different people with different personalities will react differently, mm-hmm. especially with alcohol, because of the fact that it is a depressant and it depresses the system. So if someone has a problem with depression or anger, it can become this really angry person, you know, this person that just yells at people or does terrible things, whereas someone else who doesn't have that problem with their anger or depression, they can get happy and giddy and kind of silly, and they probably won't get addicted. But people that are drinking, because it helps them to forget, let's say, it helps them to kind of tune things out, you're going to see a lot of different kinds of changes there. And that's the same way with opiates. It's even the same way with methamphetamine. People don't become addicted to methamphetamine because, you know, they want to get... Nobody gets addicted because they want to get addicted. They get addicted because before you know it, it's hit you and you can't change. It goes to different parts of your brain. New things start to happen in your brain. Changes start to happen that are physiological in the brain. And all of a sudden, whenever you, let's say, take that drug, whatever it is, or that substance, whatever that substance is, it's going to go down those same pathways until it actually makes its own sort of rut. And it follows that rut forever. And, for example, I've been an alcoholic for probably 50 years. I've been in recovery for 30. I'm still an alcoholic. I mean, I could very easily walk down the street and go into a bar, and just like that, the snap of a finger, I'd be back in my alcoholism, and just because it would immediately follow that pathway. And that pathway is the disease pathway that we talk about. And so it's very hard to pull yourself out of that rut once you get into it. It's almost impossible.
Does addiction make people do bad things, or turn them into bad people? Or is that just what happens when you're addicted to some of these substances?
Well, addiction, people feed their addiction in different ways, because it's really hard to go out and get a white collar job when you're addicted. So people turn to things that they wouldn't normally turn to in order to feed that addiction, because the brain's not thinking clearly. All you think about is your next fix, basically, when you're loaded. It does affect different people differently. They're called YETs, and it's you're eligible too. If somebody says, well, I never sold myself on the street. Well, that's a YET. You know, that's the point you haven't reached in your addiction. It's progressive disease. Like Ray was saying, it follows a rut. It's different for each person. Each person that's addicted has kind of a different reaction and at different points where they're willing to let whatever it was that they weren't going to do. Using needles is a big one. People that don't use needles that are addicted, was like, well, I'm not shooting up, so I'm better than that person over there, you know, until they shoot up. And then it's, you know, something else. Then it's, well, I'm on meth, not heroin. And then they use heroin. So it just changes. It alters our personalities and it alters our way of thinking. And so I don't look at the addict, the person that's addicted, as bad. I look at the disease as a terrible disease to have. It follows that pathway that leads people to do things that they would never normally do. So I don't know. That's kind of.
Yeah, I would say it can certainly lead to bad behavior. It doesn't start off being, the person that's taking it doesn't start off being bad. They don't go out and make a decision today, I'm going to be bad and I'm going to take drugs and then I'm going to be a bad person for the rest of my life. It doesn't work that way. People do it for various reasons. Like I say, pain reduction, self-medication. I'm just so depressed, I can't stand it. So I'll try something and the doctor isn't giving me anything that works. So I'm going to try one of these things, you know, or a young person that wants to say, wow, I wonder what that feels like. Or peer pressure when they, you know, all my friends are doing it, I might as well try it too. So there's lots of different ways to do it, but none of them are necessarily because I want to be a bad person. And they aren't necessarily bad people. I mean, you know, there are bad people in the world, and there are some bad people that are probably addicted to various things. But a person that goes out and steals to feed their addiction is not necessarily a bad person. That's a person that has no money. They probably have lost their job. They have no way to survive. They're living hand to mouth, basically. They might be begging on the streets. They might be doing whatever, selling their bodies, doing whatever in order to feed that addiction, because the addiction is like a demon. I worked with Native American tribes across the southern United States, and they look at it as a spirit, that the thing is a spirit. There's various different cultures, and various cultures use different ways of looking at what an addiction is. In our pseudo-scientific culture, I guess, we would look at it as in a scientific way, whereas the native peoples of the world look at it as either a spirit or a demon or something else. So there's different ways of looking at it. And the ways that it influences people, it can make people do bad things, but it doesn't mean that you're a bad person.
So why does it is the term disease used? Because people think, well, that's how you catch a disease. It's a bacteria. It's a virus. In this case, you're putting something into your body that didn't sneak in there without you knowing it. You put it in there. So why do they use the word disease? Is it because the symptoms you have are kind of like a disease? Or you have to have help that would cure a disease, and that's the way that you cure the addiction?
Those are all kind of valid. A lot of times I compare it to cancer. Cancer is a disease. And yet people who have smoked all their lives and get lung cancer from smoking all their lives, that was voluntary.
Right.
They did it on purpose. You know, they didn't know they were going to become, addicted to cigarettes. They didn't know that they were going to get cancer. But they got a disease from the behavior that started them on the process. A lot of diseases are psychosomatic like that. In fact, almost all the diseases we have are caused from some psychosomatic reason. Saying that a person voluntarily got into it does not make it a disease. A disease is a certain way of causing the body to react. Certain bodily reactions, certain physiological reactions happen with diseases. And so it can only be cured in some ways if it is treated like a disease. From all intents and purposes, everything that we've checked on addiction from in any different form that it takes, it is a disease. It has all the qualities of, let's say, cancer or diabetes, mm-hmm. or any of those things. It's a disease, and it can only be treated in certain ways.
And it's basically what medical professionals or people in that realm that are the ones that can help you out of that situation.
The main reason it's a disease is because it follows a distinct path. Diseases are progressive, and they have progression. They progress in a certain way. All, you know, like stage one cancer, stage two cancer. Addiction is the same, and that's when it got the distinction of a disease back in the, I think it was the 80s.
Well, it was sometime during my career. Of course, I was about 55 years, so I
the 70s or 80s, I think. Yeah, it was around that they the DSM qualified it as a disease. It was for that reason. It was because it follows a distinct path. There's a beginning and there's an end, and mm-hmm. the end is jails, institutions, and death. I mean, you know, you can lose your mind, you can lose your life, you can definitely lose your freedom.
So you kind of create a brain disease.
A brain disease.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay. Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.